When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. We are sitting here in the Michigan Avenue Allstate Showcase Studio watching as everything is getting set up. The lights parade is happening a little bit later. Streets are going to be closed down after about 4 o'clock near Michigan Avenue, so you want to plan ahead for that. But it's always a fun time and very, very beautiful to see Michigan Avenue all lit up later this evening and throughout the season. So lots to do on the Business Lunch show today, so let's get right to it. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about some changes coming to the Chicago Housing Authority's voucher program. And also, we're going to be talking about how airlines are trying to make us a little bit less crabby this year for all of our holiday travel, which I'm totally in favor of, and a fascinating spy story that we're going to be talking about, too. It is very, very interesting. But right now, another super interesting story, and one that is mighty uplifting, I might add. We're joined now by Mel Safford, who is a Chicago event producer for a company called Daybreaker, who is throwing a very large dance party to celebrate small businesses in Chicago. Welcome to the program, Mel.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. So tell us about this giant dance party that you have planned here in Chicago.
Yes, it's super exciting. It is happening next Saturday on November 26th, and it's called Daybreaker. It is a morning dance party that we hold about once a month, typically here in Chicago, but we're doing our biggest party yet in celebration of Small Business Saturday in partnership with American Express. It's super interesting because typically when people are doing a dance party or going to a nightclub like Studio Paris, you know, it's in the evening, right? And it's with your friends and kind of thrashing, and perhaps it's substance-based. And so the thought with this is let's flip the nightclub experience on its head, do something in the morning where it's sober and you're drinking coffee and green juice and with 500 other people at one of the best kind of nightclub venues in the city, but doing it in the morning and partnering with all small businesses across the city to really celebrate entrepreneurship and celebrate these small businesses that American Express has done such a good job with, and really dance and have fun with a bunch of people from Chicago.
I like how you put that very diplomatically when you said substance-based as opposed to just getting super drunk.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, some people, there really is a lot of fun when it comes to dancing. The people love a live DJ. They love a light show. They love kind of doing this group collective. But unfortunately, that sometimes means you have to stay out till 2 in the morning, and there's velvet ropes, and there's exclusion. And there's a lot of, you know, perhaps a lot of drinking and partying involved. And so we're like, why not take the good of that, which is the amazing music, the amazing lights, meeting new people, and put it in the morning when perhaps you're doing, you know, maybe monotonous activities or going for a run alone or something that feels a little boring, and kind of take the morning back and reshape that. And in this case, do it right after the holiday. It's a free event. You just RSVP at daybreaker.com and bring people together to really celebrate all of the amazing entrepreneurship and businesses that are right here in Chicago.
I really love that. And I love the healthy aspect to it, that we don't have to go, party a bunch to have fun here. And I love that you can start the day, because I have to imagine starting a day with a dance party leads to a very upbeat day for sure. And so, how many small businesses are attached to this event?
There's a great number. So we're working, it's going to be at Studio Paris, and we're working, especially like if you look at just kind of the food and beverage partners that we're bringing in, Real Good Juice Company, Dark Matter Coffee, Eastman Egg Company, and working with them to kind of really bring you don't have to, you know, drink kind of, not to name a larger brand, but there are these kind of incredible brands that are right here based in Chicago, Green Sheep Water, right? These incredible companies that are putting health first. And we can bring them to, you know, a larger group here. And that same, right, working with local artists and working with yoga instructors. Kat Aldana is an incredible instructor and her business is right here in Chicago, and getting to work with her. Show Yusuf is a local MC who's just incredible. And he's going to be hosting the whole morning with us and working with local musicians. And it's just going to be from top to bottom, it's going to be really great partners.
Excellent. And what time does it get underway?
Yeah, so it's all starting next Saturday. It starts at 8 a.m. with an hour of yoga. So we're kind of starting it very mindful, and Kat even gets a little playful, you know, in her kind of hour flow, if you will. And then from 9 to 11 a.m., it's a full-on dance party. So that is full of surprises. Think there might be a confetti blast, maybe a drum line coming through, maybe a horn section, aerial artists, break dancers, and a live DJ the whole time. And it'll wrap right at 11. And then what we'll do is kind of set up a scavenger hunt of sorts, and we're pairing people and encouraging people to go to about 10, you know, to 15 small businesses around the city and really explore all the great businesses that are right here in the city.
Excellent. And give us the website one more time of where people can go to get tickets for this free event.
It's daybreaker.com.
Wonderful. Okay, everybody, head to daybreaker.com. We will tweet this link out, too, so everybody can have access to it. And again, that's 8 o'clock, yoga starts, and then from 9 to 11, there's the dance party. Free to register, just head to that website we gave you. And we'll see you there. Thanks very much, Mel. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right, my friends, still lots to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are talking about how some changes are coming to the Chicago Housing Authority. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about how airlines are trying to make us a little bit happier this holiday season with our holiday travel. We shall see, right? Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. We're watching all the festivities planning to be underway here in a few hours on Michigan Avenue as the lighting up of Michigan Avenue happens right around dark tonight. So that'll be very, very pretty to see. But reminder that there will be some streets blocked off. So if you're coming down here, feel free to leave very early to save yourself that frustration. All right, my friends, still plenty to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch today. We have now joining us by phone is Albie Galoon, a senior reporter for Crain's Chicago, who wrote about the prepared rollout program that's going to really change housing vouchers for people after 8 years, and all about the Chicago Housing Authority and how that has been handled and how it's about to change. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Amy.
So tell us a bit about how the program stands now, because I think there's a little bit of kind of anecdotal stuff around it, right? I think the narratives people kind of all, we think we know, right? But there's a lot of probably floating myths around how the Housing Authority currently works and what it's transitioning to.
Right. Well, Chicago Housing Authority has two main programs. One is public housing, which is they provide apartments for people that the CHA owns. And then there's also this Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is formerly known as Section 8. And through that, qualified people are able to take their vouchers and go rent an apartment in the private sector. And so what happens is right now, there's no limit on how long you can have a voucher. So in Chicago, the average voucher holder is on vouchers for 10.2 years, which is a little bit above the national average of 9.1 years. And so what the CHA is proposing to do, and this is just a small pilot program, it only affects 100 voucher holders, is to end the benefit after 8 years with a possible extension for 10 years. And the whole idea is that you know, they want to nudge more people into the workforce if they're receiving vouchers. And then there's also a really long waiting list for vouchers. So there are about 43,000 people waiting for vouchers in Chicago. And so by getting some people off the off vouchers, it just frees up more space for other people who are waiting for them.
Right. So the catalyst here is probably very good intentions of trying to get help for more people here. But it seems like there's a lot of discussion that this proposal has sparked with one side saying, absolutely, this gets people back in the workforce quicker. And the other side saying, but you don't always know the circumstances people are facing. This could pull the rug out from under people.
Yeah, this really goes to the heart of the debate over welfare and welfare reform. One side of the argument is, hey, if you, it's more of a tough love argument. It's, you know, if you give these people benefits indefinitely, there's no incentive for them to go out and be self-sufficient and get jobs. So you need to impose work requirements on them. You need to end their benefits after a certain time period to provide the incentives for them to go out and get jobs. On the other hand, you know, it is more complicated than that because, at least in the housing context, because there are people who are on vouchers who are already working and they're just not making enough money to get housing that's acceptable. So I think the average person on housing vouchers in Chicago earns about $14,000 a year, if I'm correct. And so, you know, if you're paying $1,000 a month for an apartment, that's pretty much eating up most of your income. So there are a lot of people who are already working. And then if you're somebody who's not working to go out and get a job, you know, you might not get a job that's going to be able to generate enough income to allow you to pay rent out in the private market. So it is complicated. And obviously, with vouchers, you have a lot of people who are elderly or disabled receiving vouchers, and, you know, many of them can't work too. So It is complicated.
Right. It is very complicated. And I'm looking at Twitter and our text line, of course, and questions bubbling up just so that we're being clear. The voucher covers the individual needs to pay 30% of their income. If they have an income, the voucher does then pick up the rest of that for their housing.
Correct. It's a subsidy.
Right.
So, you know, they're not, it's not a total freebie, but obviously there are people who don't have any income who are receiving vouchers too. Yeah.
Sure. And so how many people are we talking about in Chicago that are currently part of the voucher program?
There are about 46,000 people who are living on housing vouchers right now. And there are another 43,000 people who are on the waiting list for vouchers. So this program, and, you know, I should say it hasn't been approved. The CHA has submitted a proposal to the U.S. Department of Housing Development for this, and they have to sign off on it. It would only affect 100 families. They would be pulled off the waiting list, and they would go from there. So, mm-hmm. You know, it is a pilot program. So they're really, you know, a big part of this is to understand, you know, how this program will work, and get data so you can make more informed decision making down the road.
Truly. And what is the timeline on rolling this out and this pilot program?
The CHA hopes to get HUD's approval in early 2017. So, you know, they will get going probably sometime next year.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we will keep turning to you, Albie Galoon at Cranes Chicago. We will keep turning to you to keep us updated as this continues. This and other related topics. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and then check in upstairs for news. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit later in the program about things that airlines are going to try to do this holiday season to make us a little bit less crabby at the airport. I'm all in favor of this, but let's see what those things are here in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Lots of people out on Michigan Avenue this chilly Saturday morning. Lots of people running around doing stuff, getting ready for the lights parade on Michigan Avenue tonight. You'll want to leave a little bit early. I suspect there may be some traffic. My friends, still lots and lots to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, of course. There is a fascinating story that is in Bloomberg right now. I encourage you all to go check this story out. The headline on it is "The Spy Who Added Me on LinkedIn." And we are joined by Garrett M. Graff, who is a writer at Bloomberg and Wired. And he wrote about a Russian spy tasked with unearthing secrets on Wall Street and forming business partnerships and recruiting others from consulting firms. He has been caught and sentenced. So joining us now to talk about this really fascinating story in Bloomberg, Garrett M. Graff. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, my pleasure to join you.
Thanks for being with us today. So talk us through this story. It is I read this with such fascination. It is a really interesting story, and you really you captured all of the nuances of it so well. I don't even know where to start with it, really. But kind of talk us through what all occurred as this story unfolded.
So this is a very, I think, sort of strange and funny and weird story.
Definitely.
Denny Buryakov, who was a Russian spy who was arrested last year in New York. He was sentenced earlier this year to 30 months in federal prison out in the Midwest. And he is he worked undercover in Wall Street for 4 years as a staffer under what spies call non-official cover, a NOC, an NOC, who was pretending to be an analyst, an energy analyst for the Russian State Development Bank, known as VEB. And he lived just in the heart of Wall Street and spent his days trying to recruit sources and uncover industrial information for the SVR, which is the Russian Foreign Intelligence Agency, sort of their equivalent of the CIA.
Fascinating, right? We don't talk about this topic very much on this show, but as soon as I saw this story, I knew we had to talk about it today. And so as this is all unfolded, and again, I encourage everyone to go find this story on Bloomberg. It is really, really fascinating. Talk to me about the headline in particular, because the headline is "The Spy Who Added Me on LinkedIn."
So it's this very funny part of modern spying, where if you're an analyst working on Wall Street, you have to do the things that people do in the modern economy. And so this was, as far as we can tell, talking it over with the FBI, he is the second Russian spy in the United States to have a LinkedIn profile. The first was a part of what was known as Operation Ghost Stories, which was the 2009-2010 FBI raid that netted, I think it was 17 total illegals living in the United States, which was a case that gave rise to the FX show The American. Mm-hmm. But Yevgeny Buryakov was the first wave of Russian intelligence officers to come to the United States after that ghost story's arrests.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Very fascinating. And so what is it that he, in his 4 years in this role, what is it, what do we believe he learned?
So this is, to me, actually the weirdest part of the entire story, which is he was here for about 4 years as best. Well, actually, we know he was here for 4 years. And as best the FBI can determine, and as best we know from the court documents, he uncovered almost nothing of value during the time that he was working here as a spy. And some of this has to do with a big philosophical difference between the way that Russian intelligence works and the way that the United States intelligence works, which is, remember, Russian spies come from a government and a society where the media is state-controlled. And so they are distrustful of the normal information flow that comes out of an open society like America. Mm. And so in many ways, Buryakov actually found very little information that he could not have found just by sitting at home and reading the same industry reports and corporate financial statements that, you know, any one of us could sit at home and read, based on the way that Wall Street works, but that Russia sort of has this this preference for trying to develop what's called human intelligence, that undercover sources who they can sort of pull out and extract information from people on Wall Street. As one of the FBI agents who's involved in the case to me said, whispered conversations always feel sexier. And that's very much what it appeared in this case.
And it certainly plays better when it becomes a movie later, certainly. Very, very.
Absolutely.
Right. Very interesting. And so it seems, okay, he's going to be in a federal prison in the Midwest for 30 months. And what has the impact been on this firm that he was affiliated with and the other firms that they have perhaps partnered with and worked with and had any kind of, you know, anywhere their fingerprints are?
Well, so this is, again, one of the funny aspects of this is that, remember, this is a Russian-owned state development bank. It is the rough equivalent of the U.S. Export-Import Bank, which your listeners might be familiar with.
Certainly.
And so all of the employees of this bank are Russian government employees. So it was not that this guy was necessarily pretending to be a, you know, just total random energy analyst. He was always known as an employee of the Russian state. But he was doing his day job and then on the side going out and fulfilling what are called intelligence tasking, sort of these missions from his handlers at the Russian intelligence residentura in New York. And so what's sort of funny about this is he's still, as far as we know, an employee of the Russian government, even as he is in prison. He is still listed on the bank's website as the deputy representative to BEB in New York. His LinkedIn profile is still up there. You can go out. You can try to connect with him on LinkedIn, although I think his internet access is now probably pretty limited in prison.
Right. Well, you're right. It is definitely a fascinating but very weird and puzzling story. Thank you for sharing it with us. Everybody, again, head to Bloomberg.com and look for this story. The headline is "The Spy Who Added Me on LinkedIn" by our guest, Garrett M. Graff. Thanks so much for being with us, Garrett.
My pleasure. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about how airlines plan to appease us grumpy passengers this holiday season. Apparently, they have ideas. We're going to hear all about them here in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. And hello to everybody out on Michigan Avenue. There's lots of activity happening right behind us in Pioneer Court, a little holiday market happening, and lots of people out on Michigan Avenue getting ready for the lights parade this evening. Looks like it's going to be pretty crowded, so you may want to arrive early and get your spot for what is always a very lovely tradition here in the city. My friends, so speaking of holiday traditions, the airlines seem to have a plan for making us a little bit happier this year as we're doing our holiday travel. That's right, despite perhaps some threats of looming strikes, nonetheless, the airline companies themselves have been toying with some ideas, and they have what apparently is a good plan to make us a bit happier, a little bit less crabby, and a little bit more, cooperative with one another this holiday season, which I'm all for, not just at holiday time. I'm for that all year. Welcome to the program, Lauren Zembach, who is a business reporter at Chicago Tribune, to talk with us about these plans that the airlines have announced. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, Amy. Thanks so much for having me on.
Certainly. Thanks for joining us. So tell us about what the big plan is that airlines have to try to appease us and make us a little bit less crabby this year while we're flying to see our relatives for the holidays.
Well, there's a number of things that they're working on. They know that a lot of people probably aren't excited to be heading out to O'Hare with the big crowds over the next few days. Everything from new security lanes that try to make that process go a little bit quicker, to better ways to track your bags in the event that they do lose track of them at some point. And then American also, if for whatever reason things do go wrong and there are long delays, which nobody wants, they will at least give you a free sandwich to try to make you a little bit happier if it's whether it's their fault or not.
Nice. Everybody likes a free sandwich. That'll work. So talk to me about these security lanes, because in the story that you wrote at ChicagoTribune.com, it's really interesting, this idea of how they're trying to kind of refine the TSA line, because there are some things that hold us all up, right? Part of that is we don't have a bin to put our things in. We have to get 7 or 8 bins to put all of our crap in. Then there's, lots of confusion. There's always someone in front of us that doesn't know where to go or when to go and things like that. But it seems like they're automating some of it to try to take some of that human error out.
Yeah. And so these are very new at O'Hare. American just put in two in the last week or so. United has had them even more recently than that. But the idea is that if you automate some of the work that goes into how the lanes run, when you walk up to them, if you're going to be out here in the next few days and you happen to see one of these, basically there's 5 stations where you walk up to the line. And so if someone in front of you, especially over the Thanksgiving holidays when you get more maybe first-time or infrequent flyers, is moving a little bit slower, you can put your stuff in the bins, push it onto the line, and it'll automatically start bringing it down through the checkpoint and you don't need to wait for anybody else in front of you.
I love that because it never fails that there's someone in front of you. Like the day that you have it all together and you pop your laptop out and your shoes are off and you're ready and you're like, I can just fly through. I packed light. There's like a couple in front of you fighting about whether or not they have to take off their shoes. Right. There's always some, no,
right.
Take off your belt. Oh, you forgot this. Like there's always that. And you're like, just go. Oh my God, just go. So I love that.
Or lugging the holiday gifts through or
right.
Especially this time of year. Yeah.
Right. People
and
bringing
so then,
a lot more stuff.
Yeah. So then also all the bins have an RFID chip on them, and they'll take a photograph of the outside of your bag as it's going down the line so that if they do spot something on the x-ray and need to track it down, in theory, it's a little bit quicker and easier for the agents to pull them. But then also, I don't know if you've ever been waiting for your bag to come out of the line, and one of the ones right in front of it, you know, some red flag goes up, they need to check it out, and they stop the line mm-hmm. to pull that bag. Well, now the lane will automatically sort of shunt those off into a separate line so that the ones behind them can keep going while they take a closer look at whatever it was that caught their eye.
Oh, that's excellent. I love that idea very much because you're exactly right. You're standing there and you're like, I'm the one right behind this guy, and he's got like a pair of scissors or toenail clippers. Just let me go. You know,
so close you can see it, but yeah.
Right, and like if you reach in there and grab your bag, oh no, 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 no. It'll be all over for you. Okay, well, I love that. And then tell me about these tags. I think this is really interesting too because losing luggage is really a pain. Anyone who's ever had that happen knows it'll just totally ruin your trip to not be able to change your clothes or have to go buy new clothes or whatever. But how are airlines working to change that?
Well, so Delta has actually been doing this for a little while where the luggage tag that goes on your bag has an RFID chip on it that will, you know, it's unique to your bag. So, you know, you can see where it is at any given time. What they've announced more recently leading up to the holidays is they're going to start, you know, if you're using their app, they'll send you notifications whenever your bag takes a new step in its journey to wherever you're flying. So when they load it onto the plane, you'll get a notification. When it's coming to the baggage claim, you'll get another little pop-up telling you which one to go to. But they're also saying that, you know, if you're and they try their best, but if they do lose your bag in flight, it does make it easier for them to figure out where it has ended up. So in theory, the idea is that they can get it back to you a little bit quicker.
I love that. That's going to save a lot of trips right there, make people much happier. Well, these are all great. And I love, you can just kind of tell how very smart people probably just sort of tackled this process and said, okay, where are the pain points and how can we help ease them a little bit for travelers? These are really excellent.
Right.
So these are really
there's
great.
Still bad weather, things that go wrong, but
right.
You know, if there's a little way they can help it out.
And you know, I know that it is the fashionable thing to do to hop on social media and complain or to vent to the person at the gate desk. But you know what? I have complained on social media, but I have always done so with great kindness because I know the person running the social media account for that airline is not the person who has put me in peril. So I would add that PSA to this too, that maybe, you know, just say, hey, at Delta or at American or whatever, can you help me out? I'm having trouble getting rebooked or whatever. I think if you just ask for what you need, it's much better than just come like, hey, you bunch of jerks, I'm stuck, right? That always goes a
I'm
lot
sure they
better.
Appreciate that too. Yeah.
Right. It always goes a lot better. But nonetheless, I think the social media accounts, all the major airlines have a devoted social media account just for customer service. I've gotten help from the Delta one and the American one and quite effectively. In fact, by the time I was still on hold with the 800 number and still standing in line it got resolved on Twitter and I was able to just go onto the flight. So I think that's a pretty effective thing to do too, as long as we keep it nice. Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for joining us to talk about all of the stuff that the airlines are doing to hopefully make things run a little smoother this holiday season and all year long. And we will keep turning to you at chicagotribune.com to read about this and other stories. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. And if you're traveling over Thanksgiving, I hope it's a smooth flight.
I'll be right here in this studio. I don't have very far to go, but thank you. You too.
All right.
All right. Take care. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to get you to news and all that and turn things over to King John here in just a bit on 720 WGN. We have run out of time, so we're going to turn things over to our good friend, King John. Hi, how are you?
Boy, talk about Northwestern football getting in the way of your radio show.
Man,
I haven't been on the air in like months, it seems.
I haven't seen you in years.
I know. It's good to hear you. I hope it'll be good to hear me for an hour. And then we've got Northwestern Wildcat football. They're taking on Northwestern. So I'll happily get out of the way for that. I just wanted to say also, Amy, I was intrigued by the notion when you and Griffin were talking about if you're unhappy with an airline experience, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And Griff was referencing the sort of hate tweeting people do when they have a bad experience, but you had more a helpful tone to it. You said, no, I've never thought to tweet for help when I'm having trouble at an airport.
Oh, they're on it.
It was like a beam of light came down on me when you were explaining this. So if I'm flying with Delta or Southwest or whatever, I should find them on Twitter and ask them for help?
Yep. They'll help you.
Really?
And
in real time, they'll read that and maybe render assistance?
Definitely. I was one time, I had trouble getting on a flight. I finally got on the flight and then sat on the tarmac for probably an hour and a half. At Delta Assist sent me a tweet to check in. I said, I got on the flight, but I'm still on the tarmac. And they like upgraded my seat and I got, yeah, they were really great.
No kidding. So yeah. If I get that ticket confirmation or something, well, I'm not, you know, sometimes I'll get that as a text message, but I need to follow my airline on Twitter and then communicate with them.
Yeah, definitely follow them. That way they can send you a private message because they're going to want like a confirmation number and stuff.
Right. Holy cow. This has been the most helpful thing I've heard in a very long time.
I'm here to help you.